The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And I am Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. I am so happy to be with you today. This is going to be a really great show, but I'll let you be the judge of that. But we think we've done a pretty good job here putting this together. A lot of help from the team, which of course I do appreciate, and you as well. And I hope you know I've sat in the seat for Todd a couple times, and I love when you join in. I love to have you join me. 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868. Is my number. And wow, there are so many things I want to talk to you about, because I know the last time I filled in, you guys are great and we had some really great discussions, and I just love to see where it goes when I get to do a show like this, because I find that people who listen to talk radio tend to be able to bring something to the table that I just haven't even thought of, and which is great. I don't like living in a bubble, so I love hearing your opinions. Let's start off with some good news, shall we? All right, we like that. Doesn't always have to be gloom and doom. There's been an analysis that's just been put out by the RNC and their research team, which who knew they had a research team? Apparently they do. And they did an analysis of the Labor Department's November unemployment data. And they found that states with Republican governors and legislatures are leading Americans back to work much faster and in greater numbers than states led by Democrats. And this is what I don't understand as we talk about this, because I hear these things and I think, well, yeah, of course, we know that to be true, right? I think most people know that. And I even think that the Democrats, like those far left friends that you have, who it's the you know, you just look at them and they look at you and you just can't figure out how the other person's processing anything. Like, how do they not see? Nancy Pelosi just bought, I think it was something like an $11 million beachfront home in Florida, not the golden state of California that has beautiful beaches, right? The Sunshine State, Beach Boys, the whole thing, right? No, not in California. In Florida. So you would think that for most people who get a paycheck or collect money or however Nancy Pelosi does it, you know, insider trading or whatever she's got going on there, however she makes her money, that they understand taxes and they understand that, oh, Nancy Pelosi's moving to Florida. Why? And I have friends who are, you know, left-leaning from New York and New Jersey, and this, and what do? They move south. They move to the Carolinas, and then from the Carolinas, they eventually move to Georgia and Florida. And what do? They vote Democrat when they get there. And you have to wonder if it's just a mental illness. Like, are you, because there's some of them are smart people, but then not so smart. So you would think that this would be a no-brainer and that people would stop voting Democrat if you have to move out of, if you literally have to move out of your state, sell your home, sell a whole bunch of belongings, deal with a moving company, because that's no fun, you know, put stuff in storage, find a place to live and everything, just so you can get out of the state that you've created. I don't know, maybe a domino would tip, you know, a neuron would fire, and you go, wow, look at that. I should probably stop voting this way. The analysis uncovered that the Republican-led states continue to outperform Democrat-led states in job recovery for 17 of the top 20 states, with the lowest unemployment in 16 of the top 20 states. The top 13 states leading in job growth are states run by a Republican governor. In order, Utah, Idaho, Arizona, Texas, Montana, South Dakota, Georgia, Nebraska, Tennessee, South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, and Arkansas. I mean, the numbers don't lie. It's like when you're on a diet. Doctor is out in my 600-pound life. He always tells them, scale doesn't lie. You can lie. And you can tell me that you know, we're eating 1,200 calories a day and lots of kale and things like that. But you put on 35 pounds in 2 months. The scale doesn't lie. The RNC analysis confirmed that 17 of the top 20 states led by Republican governors are doing a better job versus those led by Democrat governors. 18 of the top 20 recovering states have Republican-controlled legislatures as well. Both of these are the ratio that the analysis of the October data revealed. Now, Utah, Idaho, Texas, and Arizona have produced more jobs than the state had before the pandemic started and any restrictions were even put in place. I mean, Florida is the shining example of doing everything opposite of what Joe Biden's doing. Because Joe Biden, a lot of people voted for Joe Biden because of the pandemic. They felt that Trump wasn't handling it right because of the publicity. I mean, the media spin machine went into full swing to just trash Trump on everything. And so he got a really bad rap about the way he was handling the pandemic. And it was not fair at all. And so, you know, Joe Biden, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to stop your lives. I'm not going to lock you down. I'm going to lock down the virus. Yeah, about that. Not doing such a good job. 24 states that are Republican-led recovered at least two-thirds of the jobs lost during the pandemic. On average, Republican-led states have recovered 85% of their lost jobs since the beginning of the pandemic. Comparison, only 73% of Democrat-led states have recovered their lost jobs since the beginning of the pandemic. The nine states with the lowest unemployment rates, Republican-led. 16 of the top 20 states with the lowest unemployment rates are led by Republican governors, 17 having Republican-controlled legislatures. 7 of the 8 states with the highest unemployment numbers in November, 6% or higher, are led by Democrats. Democrat governors. Let's see. Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Oregon, Virginia, California, Illinois, New York. The states with Democrat governors in order of unemployment. Excuse me, I was wrong. Connecticut. Oh, I was right. Connecticut, Hawaii, New Mexico, New Jersey, New York, Nevada, and California. Overall, Democrat-led states have an average unemployment rate of 1.4 percentage points higher than Republican-led states. This is where the disconnect is for me, because I guess I don't like to live in an echo chamber. I'm open to new ideas. I'm open to you challenging me and making me think, because I think that's a good thing, as opposed to just saying, oh, well, Fox or CNN just tells me to think this way, so that's what I'm going to just parrot that back. Like, why? Don't even Democrat politicians look at this and say, huh, maybe what we're doing is wrong? Or are they so wed to that ideology? And that's going to play into that question right there. Is playing into what we're going to talk about coming up. The 27 states with the lowest unemployment rates are run by a Republican governor, averaging 3.7%, in contrast to the Democrat states, which have an average unemployment rate of 5.1%. 9 Republican-led states had lower unemployment rates in November than when the pandemic began, according to this analysis by the RNC. All right, in ranking from lowest unemployment, Nebraska, Utah, Oklahoma, Idaho, Vermont, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Georgia, and Montana. Inflation, though, despite all the, and this is all good news, because I like to, you know, start out with some good news. That's good, or end with some good news. Inflation, though, despite all of this good news, is still hit its highest level in 40 years. Jimmy Carter was so grateful for Barack Obama. He is dancing a jig right now because of Joe Biden. I mean, they've literally done everything opposite of Donald Trump, and look where we are. And they just keep going and going and going. I have no idea why, but they just keep going. 844-747-8868 is the number. So highest level of unemployment in 40 years. U.S. consumer prices rose last month at a rate not seen in nearly 40 years, underscoring how inflation threatens the world's largest economy and President Joe Biden's public support. And they sit there and they tell you that what you're seeing isn't really happening. Did you see what was it this past week about the price of meat? They blamed it on like the meat conglomerate. It's the meat conglomerates. Wait, what? What do you mean it's the meat conglomerates? What is that? Like they say these nonsensical things that, oh no, but this is a good thing because more people can afford to buy meat now. So there's less of it. So this is a good thing. You're like, wait, what? Why is this? How is that happening? It's not the way it's supposed to work. But they think that if you're outside DC, you're just an idiot, especially if you aren't a Democrat. If you're not a Democrat voter and you question anything, you're an idiot. So I guess they just think that you will swallow anything. So all of this leads me to a study we're going to talk about coming up next year. And it's a study that was done by researchers at Cornell University. Super interesting how they did this. But what they're saying is, and this they went back 30 years and they set up this whole, and I'll explain to you how they did this. But they say the political polarization in the United States may be reaching an irreversible, what they call tipping point. And that tipping point is where we are so divided, so tribalized, so balkanized in this country that even, a pandemic doesn't, even a common enemy doesn't bring us together. There's no such, we will never have a common enemy again. So really more balkanized than before the Civil War, because we at least came back together. This tipping point that they're talking about is the point of no return. You can never turn the heat down once you go past this tipping point. And I'm just curious if you see that, because I'm starting to see signs of it. I'm starting to see people that COVID broke their brains. And this, the way we're being manipulated with COVID, you know, natural immunity, even though we know they're tracking people who had COVID 20 months ago and they still have immunity, we don't give any credit for that. We discount it. We pretend like it doesn't exist. The only immunity that can be conferred upon you is by getting the vaccine and 16 boosters. That's the only immunity you can have conferred upon you. And then when you still get it anyway, they just act like that didn't happen. But it's less severe. It's okay. You won't be in the hospital. Yes, but I can get it and I can pass it on to other people. Yeah, but it will be less severe. But I thought it's a vaccine, so I can't pass it on. Totally ignoring natural immunity. There's no such thing as herd immunity anymore. You can't question science. Science is literally questioning hypotheses, except for COVID. So they've so messed with people's brains by using fear and intimidation that I think that there are some people that are in a camp that even COVID, a pandemic that threatens everyone's life equally, you know, given the parameters and you know, comorbidities and that kind of thing, doesn't care whether you got a D or an R after your name, doesn't bring people together. So I'm going to go into this, but I'm curious to find out if you think that's, are we near that tipping point? Do you see it as well? Because I do see it. 844-747-8868 is the number. 844-747-8868. I'll tell you about this study, and I want to get your opinions on this coming up right here on the Todd Stern Show.
About to back up and bring it. It's Todd Starnes.
Christmas is just around the corner, and if you are in one of the big box stores, you're not going to find MyPillow, and there's a reason why. They've been kicked out of many big box stores because of the cancel culture mob, and that's why Mike Lindell wants to sell directly to you, and that comes with some great savings. You're going to be able to get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard pillow, normally $69.98, now only $19.98 with the promo code STARNS. And MyPillow does more than just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to slippers, even doggy beds and human beds. Go to MyPillow.com/Starnes. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes. And use the promo code Starnes or call 800-544-8939. That's MyPillow.com/Starnes or call 1-800-544-8939. Also, use the promo code Starnes. Merry Christmas, everybody.
I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes. If you'd like to join me, it's 844-747-8868. So we were just talking about how an analysis was done of the unemployment data from the month of November and how the majority of states that are recovering, the fastest top 20 states, are led by Republican governors. And a good number of them have Republican legislatures. And you see this country dividing. You see people moving from these blue states into these red states. Physically, I mean, that's a big deal when you think about it. It's a big deal to sell your home. You know, you figure you're going to grow old in this home, leave all your family and friends in order to get away, to get to a state that has more freedom, better taxes, and just an overall better life. It's literally tribalism. We're moving into our own tribes. And a new study by researchers at Cornell University found that there may actually be what they're calling a tipping point where no issue that you can even imagine would reunite Republicans and Democrats again. And I'm just curious to find out if you see that happening, because I kind of do. I can see it happening. And I look at COVID with friends who are so afraid. They're so afraid. And they do things that don't make any sense. They won't hang out with people who have had COVID because they're afraid they're going to get it and give it to like their elderly parents. But yet they hang out with people who are vaccinated because they feel comfortable with that, because I'm vaccinated, like they have some kind of superpower. When if you're vaccinated, you can still get COVID and you can still pass it on. We know that. But yet, if you have natural immunity, we know that that doesn't wane. They're following people 20 months now, whereas your efficacy of your vaccine after about 6 months, some of the, I think it was Pfizer, went down to like 13%. But people who have had COVID, still going strong with their natural immunity. So, and I'll go into this a little more. So I'm just curious to know if you have seen, if you're starting to see what I think I'm seeing, what they're talking about in this study. Let's go to North Carolina. Charles, you're on the Todd Starnes Show. How are you, Charles?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. So are you seeing this balkanization of the country?
I am seeing the balkanization, and I've been seeing this balkanization really since the election of 2016. But and I'll get to that here in just a second. But if you go back to the origination of this pandemic, okay, and when it was announced in early 2020 and that this had come from China, one of the things that I really thought I would see is that Americans would unite,
yes,
and recognize that we have a common enemy in China, yep, and that they were deceptive and lied and they unleashed this on the world. Instead, you have the media and a political party that had, for the previous 4 years, done everything imaginable to have a silent coup d'etat to take out Donald Trump. Rather than support, Donald Trump, they took the side of the Chinese.
Yep.
And I looked at that kind of like, let's go back to World War II after when Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese. Imagine for 1 minute if the Republican Party had taken the side of Japan and looked for reasons why the Japanese were justified in bombing Pearl Harbor. We would have lost World War II. So yep, this has been going on. And I see the same thing that you do. And the media has contributed to a lot of this. I mean, there was a poll I heard on Bill Maher recently where over half of Democrats believe that if you get COVID, you have like a 50% chance of dying.
Yep.
And that's just totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing this, and I'm just not really seeing how we can, you know, unite as a country. We're so different. It started back in the 60s in the universities, and people are just so brainwashed. And then, you know, they get news, their news from media outlets that are just nothing more than an excuse for propaganda, you know. They're just propagandists posing as journalists.
Yeah,
so that's what I see.
Yeah, very astute observations. I want to say that because you're right. Right around the 2020 election, when it really came forward. I mean, when Barack Obama came in, that's where I noticed a lot of this divide and conquer starting. you know, dividing us by race. And we all kind of like went, oh, but because he was black, it was okay, right? Like, it's all right. He's going to bring us together. And him bringing us together was just telling white people how terrible they are. And that's where I think a lot of it started. And the idea that people should be coming together and you don't see them coming together. So interesting, Charles. We're going to talk about more of this coming up, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to... I love the Christmas music. Thank you, Kyle. I'm Mary Welter in for Todd Starnes. I'm glad you're joining me. 844-747-8868 is the number. We're talking about this study I just found so interesting by researchers at Cornell University. Found there's a tipping point where no issue that you can think of would be able to reunite Democrats and Republicans again. They say at that point, that tipping point that they've identified, extreme polarization becomes irreversible. They're a predictive model for measuring the behavior of a polarized political group like the current Senate. Shows that even an attack by a foreign power or another pandemic would not heal the political divide. And we were just speaking with Chris, caller Chris from, Charles from North Carolina. And he said, can you imagine after the attack on Pearl Harbor that, you know, Republicans or Democrats came out and tried to, and justified the attack because, you know, well, they're aggrieved and it's, you know, the U.S.'s fault and whatever we happened to do that was so terrible. I mean, think of 9/11. You had Republicans and Democrats out there together because the people who were killed in those buildings and in the Pentagon and in the field in Pennsylvania, they didn't have D's and R's after their names. They were all Americans. But if we get to the point where we're so balkanized, that's exactly what's going to happen. They said, instead of uniting against a common threat, the threat itself becomes yet another polarizing issue, according to the lead author of this research at Cornell. We found that polarization increases incrementally only up to a point, and then above that point, there's a sudden change in the very fabric of the institution, like the change from water to steam when temperature exceeds the boiling point. So their work builds on an earlier political model, and it was created to examine the two-party political system. That model looked at 30 years of congressional voting records, and they were able to correctly predict the shift in political polarization for 28 out of 30 U.S. Congresses. Now, this new model simulates the behavior of 100 politicians within a legislature who have varying opinions on, and they took 10 extremely divisive issues, including gun control and abortion. And they found that over time, their model showed that lawmakers will shift their positions on issues according to influence of like-minded allies and arguments with partisan opponents, which our Congress right now is very polarized. Nobody reaches across the aisle anymore. Right? Democrats hate Joe Manchin right now. Joe Manchin, though, has come out and told them exactly how he feels and exactly why he's not voting for Build Back Better. I mean, he's been honest with them. He's told them, this is why this is happening. This is why I'm not going to vote for it. We've got Social Security and Medicare going bankrupt. I'm not voting for something, you know, that's going to spend even more money. That's not balanced. The team manipulated what they call control parameters to see how political intolerance, party identity, and the strength of an outside threat impacts the political system. At each mile marker in time that they lay down, the Cornell model recorded two specific measures of political polarization, partisan divide and ideological extremism. The model calculated the level of extremism based on the range of far left and far right positions that lawmakers have on a particular issue. And they found that any level below the critical point any level below that, they could reverse political unrest by dialing down control parameters. But once political polarization reaches that tipping point, they could not ease the unrest no matter what variables they changed. That even included a national response to a common threat like war or disease. They said the process resembles a meltdown in a nuclear reactor. Up to a point, technicians can bring the core temperature back down by increasing the flow of water used to cool it. But if the temperature goes critical, there's a runaway reaction that cannot be stopped. And their study shows something very similar can happen in a political reactor. If we reach that point, we cannot unite even in the face of war, climate change, pandemics, or other challenges to the survival of our society. Think about that. 844-747-8868. I see it all the time. My husband flies a flag that says, "Don't blame me, I voted for Trump," because he's got to poke a stick in the cage. He does that. And we have a friend here in our town who told someone else that if it wasn't our house, like if it wasn't friends, he would get out of his car and rip the flag down. Really? You're that intolerant? Like, you're a grown adult. A grown adult with your own business, and you would deface someone's property because you don't like what it says on their flag? Like, when did we get there? And I think we all know people like that. So I'm just curious to see if you see this tipping point being reached in our society, because I do see it being reached in our society. I see people picking up and literally moving. My husband and I are talking about it because we live in the People's Socialist Republic of New Jersey, and now we've got an ammo registry in New Jersey. You know, like everything, it's just ridiculous. And we look at our taxes. Our taxes just went up 10%. Again, every year, 10%, we're paying like $20,000 in property taxes. And what am I getting for it? I'm getting the dookie for it. I get locked down. I got to wear a mask. I got to do this. Got to do that. And luckily in New Jersey, though, a lot of people just don't pay attention to it and just dare other people to yell at them. And then a fight ensues. And so there's kind of like this uneasy truce about the whole thing, with the majority of people just ignoring a lot of these mask mandates that we have and stuff, you know, in stores and things like that. And they just walk in because the teenager who's making minimum wage is not getting in a fight with you about your mask. I can't tell you, knock on wood, the last time I wore a mask. And the signs are on the doors of all these businesses. You know, "We please request that you wear a mask." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." Request denied. And in I go. So that is one good thing about New Jersey, is people are just picking and choosing what they're going to follow. And pretty much nobody says anything to you. But I see friends moving out. And the weird thing is, it's like my liberal friends who will move to the Carolinas or Florida. I'm like, "Why are you going there?" "Oh, better taxes." I'm like, "So you're moving out of New Jersey to move to a red state that has better taxes and you have a better quality of life and you have more freedom, and you're going to vote Democrat." And it never, like, that elevator, the elevator never dings on that floor, ever. But when you have people picking up and moving, excuse me, that's a big deal. And the pandemic, you know, our last caller said, you know, when that happened in this country, I never thought we would see Americans just kowtowing to this. Yes, yes. I mean, there are people online talking about, why are people who are unvaccinated allowed to fly? Because if they've had COVID, they're not going to spread it the way someone who's vaccinated is. Because even if you're vaccinated, you can get it and spread it. And nobody wears their masks properly. Nobody wears an N95. It's a joke. But they want to restrict. There are people who are calling for the restriction of fellow Americans' rights because they're afraid, because of their insecurities. Total political polarization, at least I think. 844-747-8868. Speaking of the mandates, the Biden vaccine mandate is back in effect. You had on Friday, the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit issued an order reinstating Biden's OSHA rule, requiring businesses of 100 employees or more to mandate vaccines for the employees or undergo a testing and masking regimen. That mandate had been stayed by a Fifth Circuit panel consisting of two judges, and this Sixth Circle was a three-judge panel. In the ruling opinion, Judge Jane Stranch wrote that the cost of delaying the implementation of the ETS is comparatively high. She says the ETS is an important step in curtailing the transmission of a deadly virus that has killed over 800,000 people in the United States, brought our healthcare system to its knees, forced businesses to shut down for months on end, and cost hundreds of thousands of workers their jobs. Only in certain states. In the state of Florida, that is not happening. In the state of Florida, no one's telling you to shut down your business. In the state of Florida, no one's mandating that you wear a mask. In the state of Florida, they are also not mandating vaccines. They're bucking this trend in the state of Florida, and they're doing really well. And you talk about 800,000 people in the United States. How did more people die under Joe Biden with COVID than under President Trump? And remember, with COVID, not necessarily from COVID. Big difference. How did that happen when we had three vaccines? We have monoclonal antibodies. We have remdesivir. We have hydroxychloroquine. Whatever it is, you know, your little heart desires. But there are options out there that are available, depending again on where you live, which is ridiculous. But there are options available. How did more people die under Joe Biden than Donald Trump? That doesn't make any sense to me. How did that happen? When we have all of these tools at our disposal now, we have this vaccine mandate rollout that Joe Biden, you know, shutting down the virus. How do we wind up with 800,000? Again, with COVID, not necessarily from COVID, which is one of the reasons we have such a high number. She says, in a conservative estimate, OSHA finds that the ETS will save over 6,500 worker lives and prevent over 250,000 hospitalizations in just 6 months. Maybe it would. But we know that the Omicron variant is less lethal because it's a virus. And I paid mild attention in biology in high school. So I know that viruses are living things, living organisms, and so they want to continue to live. So things like Ebola, which kill off their host very quickly, they die out. You remember Ebola? Like, you ever wonder, what happened to Ebola, the whole bleeding from the eyes thing? Remember that? You bleed from like your eyes and your ears and stuff. It was disgusting and gross, and everybody was afraid of Ebola, which I get. It killed off its host too quickly. So it couldn't spread and infect other people. It couldn't replicate itself and continue to go on. So COVID was doing the same thing. It was a very deadly strain. It was a tough strain depending on age and morbidities and things like that. So what happens? The virus mutates. And if it can sit in the host longer undetected, it can spread more. So that's what this new Omicron variant is. And we're losing our minds over this. And you get like a cold for 2 days. Very, very mild symptoms. Most people won't even know they have it because it wants to spread and replicate. But the good thing then is you get the antibodies. So, and we have yet to see how this is going to go, but we're losing our minds over this. Tomorrow, Joe Biden will be giving a speech about, you know, doom and gloom in the winter. You know, here comes winter, winter's coming, and unvaccinated people. I guarantee you he's going to be all about unvaccinated people are killers, dividing Americans, going back to the balkanization. If you are not vaccinated, you are not clean. If you've had COVID, I know plenty of doctors that will tell you don't get the vaccine. You don't need it. And that's a discussion you should be able to have with your doctor. But you're unclean because you're not vaccinated. And the vaccinated, the people who are vaccinated are so afraid, will only accept that. That is the only thing in their brain that is acceptable. In bed for 10 days with COVID, doesn't matter. Natural antibodies, doesn't matter to them. They are so afraid. And we've been so tribalized over this, which is something that should have brought us together. 844-747-8868. That's the number if you want to jump in here. I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Todd Stern Show.
Triggering microaggressions from coast to coast. It's Todd Starnes.
New worries about the Omicron variant. What have you seen in Florida?
Well, Maria, first I would say that if you look at what's happened in the north in some of these states, they've had record COVID hospitalizations. That is being driven by the Delta variant. And so, yes, we are seeing Omicron in Florida and really all throughout the country. Fortunately, Omicron is not shown to produce the same level of hospitalizations as the Delta variant did. Now, we'll see if that changes. But the numbers of South Africa, you know, I thought by and large were very encouraging and didn't justify the hysteria that you saw by a lot of folks in corporate media. At the end of the day in Florida, Floridians know we will not let anybody lock them down. We will not let anyone take their jobs. We will not let anyone ruin their businesses, and we will not let anyone close their schools. So people are going to be able to live life. They're going to be able to make their own decisions. I cannot believe that something that started with 15 days to slow the spread, now almost 2 years later, you're seeing lockdowns and closures. There are places, Maria, some of these universities, they force everyone to be vaccinated. They force them to wear masks, and they still lock down because you have these cases going up. And so in Florida, people are going to be able to make those decisions. We do put a lot of emphasis, unlike most states and certainly unlike the Biden administration, on early treatment when people do get infected. And it's not just unvaccinated, like they like to say. Our monoclonal antibody clinics that we set up across the state, the majority of people that go to those are fully vaccinated, high-risk people. And so since we've rolled out our monoclonal antibody clinics, you know, we've had one of the lowest hospitalization rates in the country. So we're going to continue focusing on early treatment, and we're going to continue protecting people's individual choices and freedoms.
That obviously, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida with a sniffly Maria Bartiromo this past week. And it was yesterday, actually. And I thought the interview with him was really good because it just goes to show the difference in how it's being treated. And it's funny because this, again, and I'm going back to this, but I know people who are, you know, so COVID phobic, and there's just been, their brains have just been so shattered by the misinformation and the gaslighting coming out from the powers that be. They want to keep this thing going forever and ever and ever, but yet they'll go to Florida for vacation. Like, why would you go to Florida for vacation? But they'll wear masks the whole time they're there. Like, but why would you go to Florida? Oh, because it's open. Yes, but you don't believe in any of this. But in their brains, they can twist it around to justify it because, you know, they're wearing a mask. So it's okay. We were just talking about the vaccine mandate back in effect that OSHA will be handling, the 100 employees or more. And, you know, Ron DeSantis, I want to just jump ahead very quickly to cut three, where he talks about, we don't even know what it means to be fully vaxxed anymore, as Governor DeSantis.
We're not even sure what fully vaccinated means anymore. The other day, Dr. Fauci said, you know, we could be that fully vaccinated means three shots, which is two shots for the vaccination and then one booster shot. Have you gotten the booster?
So I've done whatever I did, the normal shot. And, you know, that at the end of the day is people's individual decisions about what they want to do. But these boosters in terms, now, Florida, we ban vaccine passports. We won't let them fire you, even private businesses, over this because we don't think that's appropriate. But one of the reasons why we took those steps is because we knew the definition of vaccination would be a shifting target. And I predicted this a month and a half ago, and people said that I was wrong. And now we're starting to see it come to fruition. So there's going to be people who've done, you know, maybe two Pfizer shots who are not doing booster, and they could be considered in certain parts of the country to be unvaccinated and then denied the ability to participate in society like everybody else. It's gone way, way too far. And that is a decision that people should make for themselves, but they should not have their rights, freedoms, or liberties restricted based on these boosters.
So I wanted to share that with you because I thought he had a really good interview with Maria, talked about job creation and also running for re-election, whether he'd run in 24 for the presidency. But did you notice what he did there? I wanted to play that and get that in because he didn't answer the question when she said, have you had a booster? He went, well, I did the shot that I did, and you know, he kind of danced around it. And I thought that was really interesting. And I was a little disappointed in him because I like Ron DeSantis. And for those of you scoring at home, he said that he is actually going to be running for re-election in Florida and will not be throwing his hat in the ring for 2024, although I would assume if Trump does not run, that could change. All right, more coming up on the Todd Starnes Show.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee. It's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm Mary Walters sitting in the seat for Todd today. Happy Monday. 844-747-8868 is my number if you would like to join me. Love to have you. Coming up later this hour, we're going to be joined by Monica Crowley and talk to her about Joe Manchin and his like bombshell from yesterday. And it's wonderful and fantastic, of course, because I agree with what he's doing, because I think it's responsible. You know, you should probably figure out how much things are going to cost before you decide that we're going to buy it, unless you're buying it with other people's money, which is what Congress does. And here's Joe Manchin, you know, pumping the brakes on that. And we'll talk about some potential new coronavirus restrictions, which he thinks the president is going to say in his doom and gloom speech tomorrow, which I'm sure will be doom and gloom. That's just what I'm expecting. Also, economy. We'll talk to her about that as well. So speaking of economy, I found this very interesting. I learned something, which makes me happy when I get to learn things. I don't know about you, but I've always wondered how people go to Congress, how these, you know, men and women, and they go to Congress, and the next thing you know, they've got, you know, double refrigerator freezer, and it's full of designer ice cream, and you know, then they money's no object, and they're buying, you know, Bernie Sanders, an avowed communist who never worked outside of government, is somehow, you know, the owner of, you know, several dock house and, you know, a couple up on Lake Champlain with, you know, hundreds of feet of waterfront on an island. Like, how does this happen? How do these people have, like, what's their return? What's their rate on their checking account? Because it's got to be way better than the return on my checking account, because I get like a quarter of a percent every 6 months or something like that. Like, nothing. But yet they go to Congress and they all come out gazillionaires. It's really, really weird how they do it. So, you know, I know that they have reporting. And if you've ever seen the reporting, like they have to report that they, you know, bought stocks or they're, you know, worth between this and this. And the ranges are, you know, $250,000. In range. So they could have bought $5 worth of Bitcoin, or they could have bought $250,000 worth. It's a range. It's useless. Well, the people at Business Insider did a little expose and they did some digging. Actual journalism happened. I'm sure it was accidental, but actual journalism happened. And during this expose that Business Insider ran, they found that 49 members of Congress have violated federal law with their stock trading, and 182 Senior Hill aides have violated the same law. Now, do you remember Martha Stewart? Remember Martha Stewart went to jail for insider trading? Remember? She got a hot stock tip. Because somebody knew somebody whose cousin's brother's uncle, you know, knew that they were going to be selling something to somebody and you know, was going to make a lot of money because this legislation was coming, or however they, whatever it was that they knew, but basically insider trading, which is a no-no, and you go to jail like Martha Stewart, which, by the way, it kind of boosted her career, and now she's friends with Snoop Dogg, so it definitely upped her street cred. But not if you're a member of Congress, or you work for a member of Congress. So she had her, this went nowhere. This just got totally run over with, because of course the media then, in an accident, you know, because someone accidentally did journalism, everyone else has to rush to the defense to cover up the accidental act of journalism, because we can't have this out there. So she was asked in her weekly briefing at the end of last week about this report in Business Insider, and asked whether members of Congress should be allowed to buy and sell stocks. Should members of their family be allowed to buy and sell stocks? Because they get a ton of information about things that they're going to vote on, that are coming up for a vote, that are going to affect the price of certain industries. And her response was, yes, because this is a free market, and a free market economy, they should be able to participate in that. Of course, because Nancy Pelosi and her husband, Dianne Feinstein, is another one whose husband just makes these incredible stock buys. He's just like the best investor ever. He puts Warren Buffett to shame. Nancy Pelosi is worth something like $100 million. that answer was so bad and so egregious because Nancy is so smug. She's so dismissive. CNBC's Andrew Ross Sorkin called it one of the most disappointing and disgraceful comments he's ever heard on this. He said, the former government ethics chief, Walter Schaub, said, what a disgusting comment. That is the opposite of government ethics. Whole story was drowned out, though. The whole story got buried because Nancy Pelosi accidentally, you know, let down the curtain, let you peek behind the curtain. Members of Congress have access to all kinds of classified information, confidential information. And so it would make sense that it gives them an unfair advantage when they buy and sell stock. Among the findings, almost 75 lawmakers have stock in Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, which make the COVID vaccines. And about 75 of those lawmakers were trading in those stocks in the early weeks of the pandemic. How is that allowed? Should it be allowed? 844-747-8868. It is so bad that Ali Velshi, who is, you know, he's no conservative, but he laid this out very succinctly and I think very well. Let's start with cut 10, where he talks about the trading strategies of Congress.
One key area in which members of Congress are able to do things that might be considered downright illegal if the rest of us did it is in their ability to use non-public information to invest in public companies. This is not a partisan thing. It's done by members of both parties. It's validly criticized by conservative and liberal watchdogs alike. The practice of congressional trading has come under renewed scrutiny after several lawmakers from both parties traded stocks suspiciously timed with the start of the pandemic.
Imagine suspiciously timed with the start of the pandemic. They just start trading all these stocks in Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J. Now, again, if that were you, you'd be next to Martha Stewart, you know, giving napkin folding classes at your local, you know, Club Fed. But because it's Congress, it's okay. Should they be allowed to trade stocks? Here. Now, I always thought there was a law that prevents them from having to do this. Velshi here talks about the Stock Act.
The Stock Act, otherwise known as the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act, became law in 2012. It requires members of Congress, their family members, and staffers to disclose the sale or purchase of individual stocks, bonds, and commodity futures within 45 days. It's meant to discourage conflicts of interest, though I'm not really sure that it does. It doesn't actually prohibit members of Congress from doing something unethical. It just means that they ultimately must disclose the actual trade.
Yeah, 45 days later, within 45 days, and who polices this? Clearly, no one's policing it because it's a wink, wink, and a nod, nod. Those staffers get to see all this paperwork. They see what's coming. And if you did it, you would be in trouble. 15 lawmakers, according to Business Insider, are overseeing defense policy, and they actively are investing in military contractors at the same time. You've got them invested in the New York Times, Disney, Comcast, Facebook, Twitter. Every time they haul Mark Zuckerberg or anybody else up onto the Hill to ask them questions, they know the questions that are going to be asked, and they know how that could affect the stock prices that they're buying and trading. Now, I'm all for a free market economy, but there are a lot of things that doctors aren't allowed to do. There's a lot of things that other professions aren't allowed to do because it's considered, you know, nefarious because they could be on the take. But none of that ever applies to lawyers and or politicians. Same thing. Maybe it should. And maybe if they know that they can't buy or sell stocks and no one in their family can buy or sell stocks, maybe they won't stay in Congress for 30 years. 844-747-8868. Ali Velshi has a solution about trading stocks versus maybe some other funds.
Americans should absolutely be allowed to buy and sell stocks to grow their wealth, but they should do it without an unfair advantage over the very constituents that they serve. If Congress would fix this problem by removing the incentive to do the wrong thing, it might just go some distance in restoring faith of the public in Congress.
Would that go for you? Would that work for you? Would that help restore your faith in Congress? I have to tell you, I think it would for me. I think it's disgusting. They don't live under the laws that the rest of us have to live under. There's always an exception for them. Nancy Pelosi can get her hair done when everybody else is, you know, cutting their hair with a Flobee in the living room or outside. Nancy Pelosi gets to, you know, wander around a salon without a mask on and get her hair done. And they're blatant about it. They go to, you know, all sorts of fancy dinners and everything where only the staff and the help and the little people are forced to mask up while they sit around, you know, let them eat cake in, you know, Marie Antoinette. And it's okay. And they don't care. The double standard is out there and they live it and they love it and they thrive in it. Here's Ali Velshi here, just wrapping it up.
When asked about it last week, the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, affirmed her view that lawmakers and their spouses should not be barred from trading stock. Pelosi said, quote, "We are a free market economy. That should be that they should be able to participate in that." Now, she's right. This is a free market economy. And there are several ways in which people who either get non-public information or, like journalists, can influence the performance of a stock, can participate in the stock market while avoiding potential or perceived conflicts of interest, like investing in mutual funds or exchange-traded funds, ETFs, rather than investing in specific companies, or by using a blind trust.
Now, and I think that that is a nice compromise. Do I think it will, you know, not affect their votes? Of course it's going to affect their vote, but that's the thing. Their votes affect you and me, and they're voting their personal pocketbook with all this inside information. And if all of this isn't enough for you, if all of this is not enough for you, AOC comes out against this. AOC comes out and says, and I find myself, I wake up on a Monday and I'm on the same page as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I just almost went back to bed. She tweeted that it's absolutely ludicrous for members to be able to own and trade stocks, quote, "with the info we have." So I wound up on the same page as AOC today, which of course is just going to make me, you know, rethink literally everything in my life. 844-747-8868. Should they have the ability to buy and trade stock? Their families as well. And if you don't like it, don't run for re-election. They stay there because they pile up the cash. They're lining their pockets. They're not there for the salary that they're making. They're there to line their pockets. And it is clearly very lucrative. And they're doing something that they have made illegal for the rest of us. We're not allowed to do it. And if you get caught, you go to jail. All they have to do is fill out a piece of paper going, "Oh, by the way, we did this thing 45 days ago. Nobody's paying attention to it. So I guess if nobody pays attention to it, it's okay. You can get away with it. When did that system become okay? I'm Mary Walter, in for Todd Starnes, and I'll get your calls coming up on the Todd Starnes Show.
You're listening to Todd Starnes.
Walter in for Todd Starnes, 844-747-8868, talking about insider trading for Congress, which is legal, but it's not legal for you, and whether Congress needs to be restricted that they can't buy and sell stocks, that maybe they could do exchange-traded funds, something like that, or a blind trust, but their family members as well should be restricted because of all the information they get, and then they vote their pocketbook, and they are gazillionaires. Let's go to Connor in Boston. Connor, you're on the Todd Starnes Show. We don't have a lot of time here, so I want to get you in. Hi.
Hey, Mary. Huge fan. You're doing a great job.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm going to tell you. Absolutely. I'm going to tell you, when it comes down to what's going on with Congress right now, you know, with every other private sector company, relatively large private sector company, there are what they call blackout periods where you cannot buy or sell during certain times of the year, usually before earnings calls or anything like that. There should be a similar thing for Congress. If they're going into these talks with these high-level companies and these high-level executives, they should not be allowed to participate in the market. Neither should their family members. And if they're caught doing that, they should obviously be prosecuted for insider trading and also be permanently barred from participating in the market moving forward because they've used that privilege.
Yeah, I agree with you. I am so shocked that this is legal and it's an open secret and everybody knows it. And Nancy Pelosi has nothing to worry about if they start doing it now. She may just have to buy fewer designer, you know, ice cream containers, you know, whatever it is, you know, her gold that she keeps in her freezer. She's made her money. She got hers. So, you know, and people like Nancy Pelosi, it's all about me, you know, her getting hers. So that's a great idea. You know, there's a blackout period and you can't trade during that period. I like that. Connor, thank you so much. Have a great week and a Merry Christmas. I want to get Steve in North Carolina in here. Steve, we have about a minute and a half. Hi.
Hi. This is obviously blatant insider trading, and this has gone on for decades. This is nothing new.
Yeah,
both parties have done it.
Yep.
And the problem we have is that it is so rampant throughout Congress. When I was in D.C., it's not hidden. I mean, it is blatant. They are selling influence right out in the wide open. And you see it every day. And the thing is, the problem is we can't get a simple majority in Congress to stand up and say, look, the law is clear. It's on the books. If we need to strengthen it, let's strengthen it. But this is clearly, blatantly, this was never the intent of our trade laws, our internal trade laws. This is just outrageous. And yet it won't stop until we can get a simple majority of those who are willing to step away from the trough and say, look, this has gone on too long. It's got to stop. And as people, we need to do our part as a citizens. And what you do is you vote them out. And this is yet another great reason for term limits.
Yeah, they'll never impose term limits on themselves. And listen, I get it. I think a lot of people go to Washington D.C. with very good intentions, and they have no idea what they're walking into. They have no idea what a snake pit it is. I lived in D.C. for almost 4 years, and I hated every waking moment of it. I don't like the people. Sorry if you live in Washington D.C. in general. I just don't like the atmosphere. And everybody's out for themselves. And to me, it was disgusting. And I think you get sucked up in it because if everyone else is doing it, you're kind of the idiot for not doing it. So it's like everybody does it. And you're right. It cuts across party lines. They peddle influence. And then once they're done, you know, with their time in Congress, if they decide I don't want to do the rat race anymore, they're all set up and they go down to K Street and they use their connections in order to buy politicians, in order to buy influence. And round and round and round it goes. And it's really gross. But I don't see them making the law, Steve. And we got to run. But thank you so much. I don't see them making a law to cut themselves off from that. I just don't see it happening. I think it sounds great. But in practice, it's probably not going to happen. And I think we all know that. And as long as that keeps happening, well, you and I are the guys who are going to be left holding the bag. We're the guys who are going to get screwed. Coming up, Monica Crowley will be joining us. Joe Manchin dropped a bomb. We're going to talk about the effects of it right here on the Todd Starn Show. There we go. I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes today. And as I told you, we're being joined right now by Monica Crowley. Love Monica. And I cannot remember the last time I got to speak to you. I used to see you all the time. And what a wonderful treat to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Mary, it's such a joy to talk to you, too, both on and off the air. You are just fantastic, and we're a longtime friend. So, a pleasure to be here, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You, too. Merry Christmas to you as well. And one of the things that I love about Monica is she pretty much knows everything about everything, which can be a little, which by the way, can be a little annoying, but no, I'm kidding. I'm totally joking, Monica. But you do, you're very smart. You've got a good, you've got your finger on the pulse of a lot of things, which is not an easy thing to do. So I'm glad that we have you here for this. So we were just talking about, I just want to just ask you about this. We were just talking about a report that was done by Business Insider that really got zero traction last week and should have been a bombshell. And a journalist actually accidentally did some journalism, and they asked Nancy Pelosi about this expose inside Business Insider, in which they listed 49 members of Congress that have violated federal law with their stock trading and 182 senior Hill aides. And she was asked if this should be allowed to happen. Should they be, you know, considering all the insider information that you have with bills coming up and things like that, should you be allowed and family members be allowed to be trading, having all this insider information? And she said, absolutely. You should be allowed to trade. It's a free market and a free market economy, and they should be able to participate in that. And that was considered so outrageous. I woke up on the same page as AOC this morning because she thinks that this is terrible. This is never going to change, is it? And why is it allowed to happen?
You know, all of a sudden, Nancy Pelosi is a free market capitalist. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't it? They all become free marketeers when it serves their personal interests. It's like Bernie Sanders with his three or four homes.
Right.
So he wants socialism for you, but not for him. And the same thing with Nancy Pelosi. She and her husband, Paul, their net worth is north of $100 million. Paul Pelosi is very successful, and God bless him. I want everybody in America to be that successful, if not more so. So God bless. But when you're talking about potential conflicts, she made such a self-serving statement there that it's so outrageous, and we're so inured to so much of this, Mary, but it really is outrageous that she is defending members of Congress's ability to profit off of knowledge that they may have about certain stocks, certain companies. Plus, they're making judgments on entire industries in terms of regulation, in terms of other kinds of policy action that they're going to be trading on. Let me tell you, I spent almost 2 years at the Treasury Department in the Trump administration, and it was such a blessing. It was just extraordinary. But we were under really strict rules. Now, we could trade, but we also had to recuse ourselves from certain things. I, out of an abundance of caution, made sure that I liquidated all kinds of stuff and didn't basically move for 2 weeks, or excuse me, for 2 years while I was in there, because I didn't even want the appearance of any kind of conflict, right? So just because certain things are legal doesn't mean you should be doing them. And in some of these cases, it's actually not legal what certain members of Congress have done. And we saw in the Georgia case, remember Kelly Loeffler was running for re-election in January, and she and her husband had engaged in some trades, and it became a big scandal because, of course, she was a Republican. So the press was going to report on that and turn it into something. And now we've got Democrats and others who are doing this sort of thing. A lot of it doesn't get covered because the press protects them. But it is pretty outrageous, the hypocrisy. We're so tired of talking about hypocrisy, but it's outrageous. And that's one of the reasons why Donald Trump was elected in 2016, because this two-tiered justice system, two-tiered operation of standards in this country. And you know what? If he chooses to run again, it's going to be the same theme, because it never goes away.
No, it doesn't. And the guys were telling me, Kyle was telling me, that apparently there was a Twitter account that tracked everyone in Nancy Pelosi's trades, and they suspended it.
Yeah, yes, I saw that as well. Right. So not only does the press protect the left and the Democrats, but big tech does as well.
Yeah, and they're smart, because who's going to be calling them up to Capitol Hill when they parade and pretend to know what the heck they're talking about when it comes to free speech and censorship and all this other stuff? It's the same people who are trading their stocks, who own stock in Facebook and Twitter and everything else. They're like, oh, they're coming up on Capitol Hill. Stock's probably going to take a hit today, so we should probably probably sell all of that. But you know, you talk about the hubris of Nancy Pelosi, and I was saying this before we went to the break. It doesn't matter. It got covered. It got covered up. You know, it was that accidental act of journalism was, you know, shuffled away. And so nothing ever happens. They get caught all the time and they don't care. Nancy Pelosi can get her hair done walking around a closed salon with no mask on. You and I are out in the backyard with a Flobee. You know, they can go, they can go to dinner at French Laundry. They can go to parties. They can go to weddings, and they do indoors unmasked. The only people wearing masks are the help, the little people who are masked up while they aren't. And the pictures come out and nothing ever happens. So I kind of get why, if you're in that environment long enough, you start to get used to it because it's kind of nice.
Yeah, because they benefit from it. And, you know, like I said, if you have the protection of the press, you can literally get away with anything. And that's what the Democrats have enjoyed now for decades. I will say this. There's one caveat here, Mary, and the caveat is that they have the protection of the press until they don't. And the perfect example of this is Andrew Cuomo. So Andrew Cuomo had the protection of the press throughout his entire governorship, and certainly when the pandemic hit, he was turned into a giant hero. Meanwhile, he was killing tens of thousands of grandmas and grandpas in New York, and of course that didn't get covered. But the second a Democrat who's engaged in all of this behavior that no Republican could ever get away with, the second that they become either liabilities or their own side wants to dispense with them for whatever reason, they want to replace them with someone more useful to them or someone younger, whatever, then things turn and they turn fast. And we have seen it over and over again. So I would just caution Mrs. Pelosi and the rest of them who are out there luxuriating in their own hypocrisy and their own protection. I would just say, watch yourselves and check yourselves, because you never know the day or the time or the place where the winds are going to change.
Yeah, but she doesn't care. She's got her designer ice cream, so she's good to go. She's made hers. You know, she's got hers. But you're absolutely right. They will turn on you in a heartbeat. It's like what was the movie with the kids on the island? You know, they turn on you in a heartbeat, and the next thing you know they're hunting you down like Piggy there. We were talking about also a political polarization in the U.S. in a new study that was done by researchers at Cornell University. And what they basically said is they've come to a point where there's a tipping point in every society and every organization where there is no issue that can reunite two sides. And they did it with a Democrat, Republican, two-party system. And they did this hypothetical model. And they found that the United States is incredibly close to the tipping point where we are so tribal and the political polarization is so intense in this country that not even an outside influence like war or an attack on our homeland could bring us together. Do you see that happening?
Well, first, let's understand how we got here, Mary, and it is the fault of the left. The left has been at war with this country for decades now. They've been at war with the things that bind us together, or used to, the Constitution, free market capitalism, and the culture. So they are the ones who have deliberately and intentionally spent decades ripping this country to pieces and dividing us and pitting us against each other, right? Yeah. So let's understand where the fault lies and how we got here. That's number one. Number two, this is exactly why you're seeing on social media and elsewhere a rise in the conversation about a national divorce, because people understand and feel that there's nothing that really binds us together anymore. You know, it used to be like in the 1950s, for example, the things that bound us were cultural too. So everybody would get around the TV set and watch I Love Lucy every week. And then everybody in the neighborhood and everybody at your job would talk about the episode of how Madcap Lucy and Desi were like, you know. We don't have those cultural touchstones anymore. We don't have political touchstones anymore. And even economically, we have very different views of how to carry out this country. So, you know, I think we are close to the tipping point. And I know a lot of people yearn for a unifying figure. The problem is that when you have one side, the left, that is literally at war and they are fighting to win and they will stop at nothing to fundamentally transform the nation, There is no negotiation to be had with them. It's like negotiating with terrorists. There's no meeting of the minds because there is no common ground. So I really feel like we're getting very close to that. And I don't know what the solution is. I would hope that we could inspire a unifying figure, but I think everything is so tribal and so locked into place. And so emotional now that I'm not sure even if we were to get someone that sort of transcended it all, we still have a two-party system. So that person would have to come out of one of the two parties in order to win. So along with that comes a set of beliefs, a set of policies, which would set the other side off no matter what.
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's possible to really come together absent like some major catastrophe. And I hope it never gets to that point.
Yeah, no, I hope it doesn't either. Can you hang on? Because I would like to talk to you about Joe Manchin.
Sure.
Okay, great. More coming up with Monica Crowley. We got to talk about Joe Manchin and the bomb that he dropped on the left, but it shouldn't have been a bomb because he told them that this was coming. But yet somehow they are shocked. So that's coming up right just a couple minutes here on the Todd Starnes Show.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes, joined by Monica Crowley. Monica, we had Joe Manchin yesterday on with Brett Baer on Fox News, and he came out and said he will not vote for Build Back Better. He said this, it's a no. I flat out said it, and the left has lost their whatever minds they had. It was just heads exploding all across the country. But Joe Manchin, several months ago, I think it was like in August, said, how can you vote for this when you have Social Security and Medicare going bankrupt? How can you justify instituting new programs to spend more money when we don't have enough money to keep the programs going that we're currently supposed to be funding? How is this a surprise to the left?
Yeah, well, we got an early Christmas present yesterday when Joe Manchin said he was a firm no on Build Back Broke. That was going to cost about $5 trillion that we do not have. And it was going to, if they had passed it in its entirety, it was actually going to make today's inflation, which is already outrageous, look like child's play. So Manchin knew that. He also looked at the polling. He saw, number one, how incredibly unpopular Joe Biden is. So he wasn't exactly going to walk a plank by torpedoing his domestic agenda. But also he looked at West Virginia, and 74% of West Virginians did not want Build Back Broke. So he was not only taking care of his constituents, he was also taking care of the rest of us. So thank you, Joe Manchin. But the whole objective of the bill was not to actually put in place policies that are going to save the economy or serve the American people or the American worker, America's small businesses, not at all. The point of it was to re-engineer the relationship between the government, the economy, and the individual. And by that, Mary, I mean that they want a full-blown socialist, if not full-blown communist system economically in this country. That's what this bill was leading us toward. It was chock-a-block with all kinds of new entitlements that reached right into the middle class. Why? Because they want to expand dependency on government. And the way you do that is by expanding it into the middle class and locking people into the goodies so that not only are they increasingly dependent on government, but they're increasingly dependent on the Democrats to keep the gravy train going. So that's what this whole thing has been about. It was also chock-a-block with Green New Deal stuff for climate and all this other stuff to remake the U.S. economy. So it was a very good thing that Joe Manchin said no. I would just caution that the Democrats are very wily and they realize that they've got a very limited window here before November's elections, and that what they might try to do is break apart the bill into smaller segments and try to pass them as standalone things. The problem there is you've got a lot of vulnerable Democrats who are not going to want to raise taxes to pay for all this stuff in an election year.
Do you honestly think that Joe Manchin was the lone voice, or were there other Democrats who were just hiding behind Joe Manchin, being very quiet? They were more than happy to let him be the face of this, and they were very happy, you know, applauded when this went the way it did.
Well, I think there was something of a deal between Manchin and Sinema. I have no evidence of this. It's just my speculation.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Sinema gave the thumbs down to changing the filibuster for this quote-unquote voting rights bill. So I think the two of them probably made a deal where Manchin said, I'll torpedo BBB if you torpedo the quote-unquote voting rights bill. So I think maybe that was it. But I do think that there were a number of other Democrats who were very uneasy with this bill and were too cowardly to come out in public and say, because they're in swing states, or they're up for re-election next year.
Right.
I'm thinking about like Mark Kelly out of Arizona. I'm thinking of John Tester in Montana. They probably were just saying, look, politically, I just can't do it, but I can't vote for this, so can you take all the slings and arrows? And Manchin stepped forward. God love him.
Yeah. We have about 2 minutes here, and an analysis was just done of the Labor Department's November unemployment data by the RNC. And they found that overall, you know, the Republican-led states, the top 20 states in recovery are Democrat or Republican-led. 17 of them have Republican legislatures as well. Of course, the Democrat states, higher unemployment, slower recovery, Republican states backed better before than they were before the pandemic. Do the Democrats truly not see this, or do they see it and they don't want it for whatever reason?
Well, they see it. You know, one of the things that used to drive me crazy under Obama and is still driving me crazy under Biden is when people say, oh, I can't believe how incompetent they are. This is not incompetence. This is all deliberate. It is all intentional. So we got to come from that place. Look, they know what free market economics are. They know how the market works. They know what capitalism is. They just reject it. So stop excusing their bad decision making by saying, oh, they just don't understand. They understand. They just reject it. They're socialists.
Yeah. After they got theirs. Monica Crowley, thank you so much for joining us. You have a blessed Christmas. It was great to talk to you again, my friend.
You too. Thanks so much, Mary.
Coming up, we're going to talk to David Barton, founder of Wall Builders. That's next right here on the Todd Starn Show.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
I'm Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. Our next guest, this is so interesting to me, and I learned something. I didn't know this. It's David Barton. He's the founder of Wall Builders, and you can find them at wallbuilders.com. And there's a if you go to their page, if you go to wallbuilders.com and then forward slash Christmas dash message dash wartime. Such an interesting story, especially for people like me who are total history dorks. And I love this kind of stuff. David Barton, thank you for joining me.
Hey, Mary. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
This is, and I'll let you tell the story, but I find this so interesting because, like I said, I love history. And I do believe when, if you look at history, if you look at the founding of this country, if you look at the Revolutionary War and things that have happened and things that happened throughout our history, when it came to large conflicts and times of strife and upheaval, I personally, and maybe you see what you're looking for, but I personally see the hand of God. And I do think that there are things that have happened that at the right moment, at the right time. And I know George Washington felt that this country was divinely inspired and that there was a certain hand of God in the founding of this country. But you have a story here from World War II. So modern times, not the Revolutionary War, more, you know, this is something that happened not all that long ago in the history of the world. And it had to do with something that you hear a lot, again, in the Revolutionary War stories, with weather and battles and the saving of the future of the world when it comes to World War II. Could you share the story, please?
Sure could. It deals with Patton. Patton had come into the war in early 1943, late 1942, went across North Africa, just really liberating North Africa from the Nazis. And then it comes D-Day. And at D-Day time, he is a decoy. He's not there at D-Day. He convinces the Germans that he is leading the force attacking elsewhere, so we land on D-Day. And then after D-Day, Eisenhower moves Patton over to Normandy and says, now, go get Hitler out of Germany. And so two big American armies, Courtney Hodges with the First Army and Patton with the Third Army, start moving to the east, headed straight for Germany to get Hitler out. And as they're moving that way, the problem they have is really bad weather. The American tanks, and of course Patton was a tank guy, but the American tanks were much inferior to the German tanks. Our Shermans and their Panzers and Tigers, it wasn't a match. What made it possible for us to win was keeping planes in the air, P-51s, P-47s. They would shoot the German tanks, and our guys kept making advances. But Patton went through weeks of not being able to get any planes in the air at all. And so he's having much higher casualty rates than he should have. And the problem is he needs good weather. And as he's moving toward Germany, it is so bad that in the foxholes, they're filled with water, they're frozen water, and he's lost 15,000 soldiers who had their fingers and toes lost to frostbite. I mean, it is terrible. And so as they're going in that direction, he's watching and he sees German units start disappearing. And he and his intelligence guys get together and said, hey, these German units that were in front of us aren't there anymore. They're about to make a counterattack, which is what became the Battle in the Bulge. They attacked Courtney Hodges, who was north of Patton. They broke through Courtney Hodges' American lines, got 60 miles behind him. And so Courtney Hodges' guys are having to hold out, and that's where you have Bastogne and St. Vith and all these famous battles. And Patton says, we're going to have to go rescue him. And so Eisenhower says, hey, Patton, go get him. And so Patton turns his army to the north to help Courtney Hodges. And as he's going to the north, he is still ticked off about the fact that they've got such bad weather. If he just had some good weather, he could defeat the Germans and save the guys at the Bulge. And so what he does is he goes through Luxembourg. He stops at a church in Luxembourg. He and his top staff go inside. And it was Patton's custom that as he was going through different towns, he would stop in the churches and he would go, and a lot of more high church Christians. And so there would be a statue of Mary inside, and he would go stand in front of the statue of Mary and brief, or a statue of Jesus too, excuse me, statue of Jesus and Mary. He would go to the statue of Jesus and stand there and brief Jesus, said, all right, here's what we did this last week. Here's what I'm planning to do now. He would brief him just like it was Eisenhower or Superior, and then he would go on and fight the battles. So in that church there at Luxembourg, he stopped, and as he's talking to Jesus, he actually is really ticked, and he starts cussing at Jesus, and he says, why can't you just give me 4 good days of weather? If I had 4 good days of weather, I could defeat the Germans and save the Americans and end the war. And his staff wrote down his prayer that he prayed there, and it was passionate. And so starting the next day, he got 4 good days of weather. And those 4 good days of weather allowed him to defeat the Germans. But what was interesting, as he was turning toward the what became the Battle of the Bulge, he also had his chaplain, James O'Neill, write out a prayer. He said, I want a prayer for weather. I want all 250,000 of my men praying that God will change the weather. And so that card was written out. It was given to all the soldiers. It had Patton's Christmas greeting on it. If you can imagine, this is your Christmas of 1944, being in the midst of this war. And so they started praying that prayer, and it was the next day, which was the day that Patton stopped at the church, that the weather got good. So after we win the Battle of Bulge and after we get the Germans back, it's interesting, Patton actually called in Chaplain James O'Neill and gave him a Bronze Star for getting his prayers answered. And then Patton stopped back by the church on the way after he'd won the battle, going back to his army. He stopped there and he apologized to God for having cussed him out. I was so passionate. I really wanted to win, and you showed up, and you did this, and thank you for doing this. And so, Patton, it's a great story of Christmas time. We actually have the magazine that came out right after that, where that his officer said, this is the prayer that he prayed. We wrote it down. We asked him if this is correct. He says it is. And so 1947 Christmas, True Men's Magazine came out with that story, which is a phenomenal story of God's intervention in Christmas of 1944.
It's unbelievable that just the idea that Patton was that religious. This would never happen today, would it? You would never see this, because handing out any kind of greeting that, you know, said to the troops to, A, with a Christmas message on it, would be heresy because you're offending people. And, you know, someone may not be Christian, and so you can't do that. But, you know, someone like Patton, a general like that, putting so much stock in the power of prayer, I sadly don't think you would ever hear this story ever happen again.
Well, it's interesting that we had at that time President FDR. Every single soldier, sailor, and airman was given a Bible with FDR's message in it that said, hey, guys, you've got to stay in the Scriptures. You have to read the Scriptures. This is what's key. And so that had been common for military leaders since 1680 is when we started first giving the first Bibles to the military to remind them that God is what you rely on in times of war. And then Obama is the first one to change that. Starting with Obama, he said no military insignias, military Bibles can be given out. We'll no longer do that. It was restored under Trump, and now under Biden, it's back again. So even today, as we're talking, there's a lawsuit going over even laying Christmas wreaths on Christian graves at Arlington Cemetery. And so they're back to saying, hey, soldiers can't have anything to do with religion. They're after the dog tags again that have Bible verses on them. So it's a culture conflict today that should not be. This is something way over 300 years old in our history, and Patton was right in the middle of what history used to be, which is quite different from what it is today.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're talking about with the wreaths was that Wreaths Across America that started with the company, I think it's in Massachusetts, where they lay the wreaths on the graves all over the country, and volunteers do it. And when I was in Washington, D.C., I said I always wanted to do it at Arlington. I always wanted to volunteer to do it at Arlington. And they're saying, well, it's an assault on these men and women who aren't Christian. It's like a gang symbol. They actually called it a gang symbol for Christians to put wreaths on graves, and that everyone should have to request it. If a soldier's family doesn't request it, then you can't put a wreath on a grave, which of course makes it impossible to do. And these people aren't complaining about this. It's just the people who are the perpetually offended class who, you know, want to ruin it for everybody else because they're personally offended. And something like that is going to be sad because there are graves where I'm sure there's no family. These, you know, they've been there for a long time. Some of those graves go back to the Revolutionary War, I think, right, Lee? Yeah. That was Civil War. And, so there wouldn't be any wreaths on those graves. And I think they're going to overplay their hand. I think too many people like the wreaths on the graves and think it's a beautiful tradition. So I think they overplay their hand and the majority of people ignore them. At least that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, it's interesting that Wreaths Across America actually instructs its people when you're putting it down, if you see any kind of a Jewish symbol or other symbol on any of the gravestones, don't put one there. Just put it where there's crosses. Put it where there's Christian symbols. And so that in itself is, you know, they're screening in the right way, not trying to coerce anything. But what happens is Mickey Weinstein, who's head of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, he used to brag under Obama that he had so many friends at the Pentagon that he could call them and within an hour have a religious activity shut down. He was right. He could do it. He could not do that under Trump. He's able to do that again under Biden. So he was 4 years really silent, and now he's back in the culture wars. And he is the offended class. Anything, it doesn't have to necessarily affect him, but if he sees anybody doing it to anyone else, he's offended on their behalf. And most people are not offended over what he's offended on, but he was a JAG attorney in the Air Force at the Air Force Academy. And so this is his mission in life, is to expunge all religious acknowledgments of any kind from anywhere in the military. And that's what he's been aggressive on for years and years.
Yeah, well, he's a very sad, angry man. And I pray for people like that because I can't imagine. It's got to be exhausting waking up every morning and hating the world. It just has to be exhausting. You know, life ain't easy. It's, you know, my father always used to say, if it was vacation, they would call it vacation. It's called life. You know, and going through life like that and just making other people miserable because you're miserable has to be a very, very sad way to go through life. But this is incredible. Like I said, it's wallbuilders.com/Christmas-message-wartime. You could read about it. You can read the prayer there. And I'm so glad that we got to hear the story. Thank you so much for taking the time to share it with us. It's such a wonderful Christmas story. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. God bless. Bye-bye.
Have a very blessed Christmas. David Barton, founder of Wall Builders. 844-747-8868. I have some calls to get to coming up next on the Todd Starnes Show.
From the front lines of the culture war, it's Todd Starnes.
Mary Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes. Let's go to the phones here. Let's talk to Sick and Tired Patriot. Huh, I'll be the judge of that. Sick and Tired. How are you? Are you sick and tired?
Hey, Mary. Hey, pretty good. I tell you, two guests you just had on really set up the good foundation for my bombshell I want to throw on you today, if you can handle it.
Or I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah. You was talking about these secret investments and stuff, or how they have their informations to what invest in, and the other gentleman there talked about the, you know, how our generals back then, they prayed, they believed in God, and that's how wars were won then. How they've took technology and inventions of stuff, and over time seems to be using it either. I'm gonna just say against some of us. It seems to. Mm-hmm. It's like these. One of them was like President Lyndon Johnson, you know, come out and told everybody those, you know, who control the weather will control the world. And you go out and you see them, and they're spraying this stuff. These companies that you can find all over Google nowadays, dropping silver iodide and aluminum oxide and much other stuff that's in them chemtrails to weather seed. And, you know, and it just makes you wonder how much of that stuff gets out of hand and how much damage that causes across the globe, and how much the investors commercial companies and large companies like that are making out when things get destroyed because some storm got out of hand, they overseeded or something like that, how much damage was done, how much money somebody made over the damages, how many lives might even got lost.
Listen, when it comes to some of this, I mean, as far as like the chemtrails and that kind of thing, like I'm sure like when they seed and when we play with weather, whenever we try to control Mother Nature, something bad always happens because we're humans and you can't control Mother Nature. It's like the ocean. Mother Nature is going to take what Mother Nature wants, right? So if Mother Nature wants to move the ocean into your living room, that's where it's going. And the amount of hubris that it takes to think that we as humans can control that is laughable. We can't control it, and so we keep trying. So what happens? You mess up. You're going to make mistakes, and you're going to have the unintended consequences of things like trying to control the weather. And I get it, you know, especially when there's areas where there's a drought. I was just down in Virginia, and they have a drought there, and they're worried about that. But to think that we as humans can change that and change the weather patterns, I just think is folly and is something that we probably should not be messing with. you know, I just think that it's something that, you know, it's a little off limits, right? You don't want to break it. You can't control the weather. Things are cyclical. The Sahara Desert used to be a tropical rainforest. You know, there used to be glaciers in Manhattan. So do we go back to that? I don't get that. And yeah, I think we've engineered a lot of things. I look at COVID. I think COVID came from a Wuhan lab and that was engineered. And that's why like weird stuff, like you lose your taste and smell. And when it comes back, things taste weird. Like, why do Oreos no longer taste good? And who do I sue? Because if Oreos don't taste good to me anymore, somebody owes me some money. You know, the Chinese owe me some money. So I think there is some sense of things going on that you got to be careful. And I think sometimes it's not always nefarious purposes, right? I think sometimes that things are with the best laid plans of mice and men, and with the road to hell being paved with good intentions. You want to help farmers out. You want to be able to grow the crops. You want to be able to do things so you see the clouds and all that. But do I think that's causing, you know, the outbreak of tornadoes in Kentucky? No. The United States has the most violent weather anywhere on the planet. We have it all here because it's huge. You've got the plains wide open. You've got the Rockies, the jet stream. It just makes for crazy wild weather. So it's a little nuts. All right, coming up, Miranda Devine, the author of Laptop from Hell, her new book about the family, the Biden family, the Biden crime syndicate, if you would like to call them. That's my own personal description of the Biden family, because I think the Biden family is doing a lot of things that no one else would get away with, especially if their last name were Trump. But because it's the Bidens, we just turn a blind eye to it because it's Hunter and he is just a disaster. So we're going to talk to Miranda Devine. You also know her as a columnist for the New York Post as well. That is coming up next on the Todd Starn Show. Welcome back to the Todd Starn Show. I am Mary Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes. And as I told you, we're joined now by Miranda Devine. She's a New York Post columnist. You see her often on television. And she has a new book out called Laptop from Hell, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and the Dirty Secrets the President Tried to Hide. Miranda, thank you for joining us on the Todd Starn Show this afternoon. I really appreciate you being here with us.
Oh, pleasure, Mary. Great to be with you.
So now, how did you get Hunter Biden's laptop?
Well, Rudy Giuliani gave it to us. So he was given it by the owner of the MacBook repair shop in Delaware, where Hunter Biden had dropped it off and never picked it up again. And John Paul MacIsaac was the owner, you know, a patriot, a decent person, and at great risk to himself, but also because he was worried about what he'd seen on the laptop. He handed it over, first of all, to the FBI after he'd had possession of it since April of 2019, handed it to the FBI in December of 2019, and then about 6 months later or 7 months later, he decided he would try and contact some Republican members of Congress like Jim Jordan, which he did, but they didn't respond to his emails. And then he saw Rudy Giuliani on TV talking about Ukraine and the Burisma, that energy company that was paying Hunter Biden $83,000 a month to sit on its board in Ukraine. He saw a lot of that going on to do with the impeachment. He thought that what was on the laptop might help Donald Trump. He was a Trump voter, no crime in that. And so when he saw Rudy Giuliani on television talking about this corrupt Ukrainian energy company, he thought, well, I'll try him. So he sent an email, which ended up being intercepted by Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, Bob Costello, who was contacted me. And Bob Costello is a former prosecutor for the Southern District of New York, pretty forensic mind, and he saw the email and the detail in it, and he thought there may be something in this, and so he contacted John Paul MacIsaac, who FedExed a copy, you know, a thumb drive copy of the hard drive over to his house in Long Island, and what he saw blew his mind. And so he and Rudy Giuliani spent about a month going through doing the due diligence on it before they contacted anyone from the media.
Now, what's interesting is that there was zero interest in this whatsoever. I mean, zero. If this were Donald Trump Jr.'s laptop, we would know every dirty little nuance, turn of phrase, et cetera. And so we all know that. But yet Joe Biden's DOJ went after Project Veritas because they tried to turn over his daughter's diary. Yet they had no interest in getting this laptop back. Why?
Well, it is really extraordinary, and you put your finger right on it, the really peculiar behavior of the authorities, of law enforcement, when it comes to Biden family secrets. And you just mentioned James O'Keefe at Project Veritas. I mean, they were offered completely separate to the laptop, but it is a fact that there are, people in the Biden family who have addiction problems, and they do lose their property, which happens to people who are addicts. Hunter Biden, for instance, has lost three laptops that we know of. And apparently Ashley Biden mislaid her diary, and it was found by somebody who decided they would try and monetize it. It found its way to Project Veritas, but they decided not to publish it, because they couldn't verify that it was Ashley Biden's, and they probably thought there was really no public interest in it. I mean, it's a private diary, unlike the laptop, which has a lot of evidence of Joe Biden, monetizing his influence overseas, and thus it has implications for America's national security interests. Project Veritas decided that it was not worth publishing the laptop. The diary. So they, in fact, handed it back to authorities. And then, you know, sometime later, they're raided. James O'Keefe is handcuffed, taken outside in his pajamas or his underwear in front of his neighbors, humiliated. And he's not the only person who has been raided by the FBI who's been involved in exposing Biden family secrets. Rudy Giuliani himself had a dawn raid from the FBI, all his devices seized, just like James O'Keefe. James O'Keefe should be protected by the First Amendment. Rudy Giuliani, a lawyer, should be protected by legal privilege, as well two other lawyers associated with Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump also were raided, Victoria Tensing and Joe DeGeneva. Mm-hmm. So, and in fact, you know, anybody who has tried to expose what's going on with this influence peddling scheme of the Bidens or anything else that they don't want exposed seems to meet a sticky end. And that is not the way things should go.
No, they shouldn't. I just thought it was so interesting because I thought Rudy Giuliani said when they raided him, he was like, I got Hunter Biden's laptop. And they're like, we don't want it. We don't want it. And they wanted nothing to do with it, but yet they sick the DOJ on James O'Keefe because of Ashley Biden's diary that they didn't even publish or do anything with. It just seems to be odd and random with no rhyme or reason to the reaction whatsoever.
Yeah, unless your rhyme and reason is to protect Joe Biden and do his bidding. I hope that there's another reason, but that's the most obvious one. And, the FBI has had a copy of the laptop or a laptop, one of the laptops lost by Hunter Biden. They've had that since December 2019.
Yes.
So they've also had the contents of Tony Bobulinski's phones and, his documents, his devices, which he also handed over to the FBI in last October 2020. And as I did in my book, when you put those two pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together, you have almost the entire story of this really rancid scheme that the Bidens were peddling internationally. And Tony Bobulinski's material overlaps and confirms and verifies a lot of what's on the laptop, but it also augments that there's material there that you don't have on the laptop. So, I mean, there's ample material there if the authorities want to do the right thing, and let's hope that's what they're doing. We know that there are investigations that the DOJ is conducting into both Hunter Biden and his uncle Jim Biden, Joe Biden's younger brother.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. Mark Meadows came out and said, well, when we take control, we're going to do this, and we're investigating this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. I have zero confidence that the Republicans will do a darn thing. What about you? Do you honestly think that they would get some kind of investigation into any of this?
Look, I hope so. I do share some of your cynicism, but look, what we do know is that Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson, two Republican senators, really did a great job last year when they conducted an investigation into Hunter Biden and mostly the Ukrainian corruption. And they had access to some very important documents from the Treasury Department, and these were suspicious activity reports that banks are required to file when suspect money comes into American bank accounts from, for instance, whether it be sanctioned individuals or sanctioned countries like Russia or China, corrupt oligarchs and so on. And so there was a lot of evidence of money coming into bank accounts associated with Hunter Biden's business partners, which tallied up with material on the laptop and with Tony Bobulinski's materials. So that's very useful. I think Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson were really on their own doing that investigation and were traduced and smeared by the Democrats as agents of the Kremlin peddling Russian disinformation, which is always the go-to excuse for the Bidens and the Democrats. But I think that, if the Republicans do win back the House and the Senate in the midterms, that there'll be a new crop of, let's say, red-pilled Republicans coming in who will be on a scorched-earth mission, not the sort of Queensbury rules, good guy, we're all in this together, uni-party, you scratch my back, I scratch yours mindset, which I think we've had from the Republicans, because they also have been playing the same influence mm-hmm. peddling games and, insider trading games that people like Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden have been doing. So maybe they're not as good at it, but the fact that they are so reluctant to go after this open corruption tells you it's not just cowardice. Or maybe it is cowardice, but maybe they're worried that they will be found out themselves.
Yeah, because Republicans will get popped for it. It's laptop from hell, and I mean it is everything. It's just so fascinating, and you're going to read this and like, how is this happening, and no one paid an ounce of attention to it? It's just absolutely mind boggling. Very quickly, since you do know the Bidens, because you have been involved in this and you have gone through some of this, you have such an insight into the family and Joe Biden's thinking, and I use that term loosely. Tomorrow, he is due to talk to us, about the Omicron variant, and we're going to have Joe Biden's going to come out and give us doom and gloom. That is my guess. What do you think we hear from Joe Biden tomorrow when it comes to this press conference on Omicron?
Well, I think a turbocharged version of what he did last winter. Last winter he called it that we were heading for a dark winter, and just as people are gearing up for the holidays and for Christmas and looking forward to seeing family and putting them a really tough year, he's doing it again, and this time he's calling it a winter of death and severe illness. So he obviously on the one hand, seems to really revel in misery and making other people miserable, and revels in the power of being able to do that and disrupt people's lives. But also, he does seem to have a really unnatural and unhealthy fear of everything, really, and also understands that you can, by making people afraid, you then have power over them. And because his polls are in such a shocking position. I think COVID, he's not doing well with COVID either, but that's probably the least bad of all the issues that he's being marked on. But what can he do? I mean, he can frighten everybody. He can do what he's already been doing and the White House has been doing in the most despicable fashion and demonize the unvaccinated, pretending that they're all Trump voters and white supremacists and domestic terrorists, as Trump supporters, of course, are in his eyes. So all he can do is warn people to get boosted. Maybe he'll wheel out a few more mandates. And we know that Bill de Blasio in New York, the New York mayor, has been begging for more intervention from the feds, just what we need. So I hope that that this doesn't actually destroy people's Christmases. We know that Omicron, if they're being honest about it, appears to be, from all the results that are in so far, to be a milder version but far more contagious. And, you know, you've got the NFL's now, I think, given up even testing people.
Right.
Everyone is going to have this within a few months. And so, you know, I know so many people who've had it. I've just had it, you know, fully vaccinated. Vaccinated people are giving it. Vaccinated people are getting it. They're not getting terribly ill. And maybe that's because of the vaccines. You know, the vaccines may be preventing severe illness and hospitalization. But we just need to be realistic about this. And unfortunately, when you look at the polls, Rasmussen has a new poll out showing that 70% of Democrats are concerned about the new variant, whereas only, I think, 43% of Republicans are. There's an outsized fear coming from Democrats, and I think it's because the media that they consume, and they consume only a very narrow portion of the media, is the sort of CNN, MSNBC, panic porn. They're trying to up their flagging ratings by terrifying people out of their minds.
Yeah.
Now that Trump's gone, that's all they've got.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you replace God with government, then you are dependent on the government for your safety and your security and everything else. And I think that we have had a large step towards that. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Joe Biden does tomorrow. And by the way, when is de Blasio gone? I thought he was done. Why is he still talking?
Yeah, why is he still talking? He's gone in our mind. And we know that Eric Adams, the new mayor, he's saying, I'm the mayor, I'm in charge, so just ignore de Blasio, which is what everyone in New York is doing. De Blasio is the lamest of lame ducks and very unlamented.
Well, they voted for him twice, so I don't feel sorry for any of them. You get the government you vote for, so I don't feel sorry for any of them.
No,
Miranda Devine, the book is Laptop from Hell. Quick read, interesting read, because you're going to get sucked into it. It's fantastic. Don't wait for beach season. You want to read it? It's a good winter read. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful, blessed Christmas.
Thank you. You too, Mary. Great to talk to you. Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Your call is 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868. Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes on the Todd Starnes Show.
It's Radio Free America. Todd Starnes.
And welcome back. I am Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. If you want to jump in on anything we talked about during the show, feel free. 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868. I just wanted to share something that I think it's kind of nice. It is a poll that was done of 2,000 Americans, and it was conducted by One Poll on behalf of something called Memento. And they found that 3 out of 4 Americans have a newfound admiration for their loved ones this year, because the 14 days to flatten the curve is now 2 years. Ah, good times. Remember when they said 14 days to flatten the curve? Good times. Ah, Oh, from the government, I'm here to help. So now never trust them when they tell you, we're just going to lock you down for 14 days. Don't worry about it. I know it's going to hurt your business a little bit, but it'll be worth it. We're all going to sacrifice and get through this together. Don't ever believe a word they ever say, ever, because they're all big fat liars. But back in the day, we were young and naive. You know, it was a long time ago and the winter of our discontent. But 3 out of 4 Americans say they have a newfound admiration for their loved ones this year as the pandemic reaches its 2-year course. 64% are close, say they're closer than ever to their families despite the limitations of the pandemic. 7 in 10 shared that they look through photos and videos to feel more connected to their loved ones. They say that giving a loved one a phone call more often, 66% say that they plan to do that to stay in touch, which I think is so important, especially for the older generation who a text just doesn't cut it. It just doesn't. It's impersonal. It's quick and dirty. You got to pick up the phone and give grandma a call. You have to do that. They say 24% want to hear from an old childhood friend, 23% from a long lost family member. So I thought that this was really good that that people are feeling more connected and they've learned how to reach out and, you know, maybe hit up some of the old timey technology like the phone in order to stay connected with loved ones. So I hope that is your case this holiday season. Thanks for joining me. Thank you for letting me be here and have a blessed Christmas.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.